You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company ahead of just the one event this week, the Valero Texas Open, and we will also be having a cursory glance towards the market at the Masters as well, here with William Hill, just 1 week away from this season's first major championship. Dave Callner here alongside Dave Tindall on this edition of the pod. Dave Tindall, good morning to you.
Hello, Dave.
Are you very well?
I am very well, actually, yes. I can't stop thinking about the Masters, to be honest. I have to focus on this week, but it's difficult not to let your mind run away, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, I must admit. I am hoping we're going to get a winner for the podcast, obviously, in the Masters, but it's just such an incredible event, and there's so many storylines going into this year's first major. You've obviously been to Augusta National and seen it firsthand. I've only seen it via the television screen, but it is so finely manicured. It's of a different world, Augusta National.
Yeah, it's a good way of describing it. It does seem just otherworldly when you're there. And it's not like the TV are kind of making it otherworldly. It is when you're there. It's just astonishing. And it's just got that aura that all the players, you know, these players have played everywhere and done everything, and yet they still have this kind of, my word, we're on hallowed turf there. Mm. So, yeah, I can't wait for it.
We'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. Yes. Just give it a quick look as far as the market is concerned with William Hill. But first, last week, Kevin Kisner won the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play Championship. Gutsy performance, lost his first match on Wednesday, 3 down on Thursday, but prevailed in the final against Matt Kuchar. A sweet victory for Kisner, given how he was pulverised by Bubba Watson in the final 12 months ago.
Yeah, what was it? 7-6, the old dog licence last year. But yeah, I think one of his quotes was doing the rounds, wasn't it? Kisner's from last year, where he said something like, you can just hit the ball and it rolls for miles. So that was the hint that short hitters could do well there. And after you've had DJ and Bubba Watson winning the last two, and Jason Day the one before that, the idea that it's a sort of just for bombers was sort of put right, wasn't it, firmly by Kisner. Although he'd, to an extent, he'd done that last year by making the final.
Yeah.
But yeah, we saw quite a lot of shorty hitters, you would say, wouldn't you, in terms of the semi-finalists. You've got Molinari and Kuchar, not the bombers, are they? So
it's a fantastic golf course for match play.
I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was great.
I think it's a brilliant venue for match play because you've got some slightly quirky holes. You've got some holes where you can rip it with a driver. You've got to use a little bit of imagination on the track as well. I think it'd be fantastic for a Ryder Cup down in Austin.
Yeah, I just like the finishing holes, and I like the way the wind could switch. So one day you could drive that 18th green, and it was a weird one because the short hitters could land it in kind of like the speed run so that it would bound on, and if you hit it too long it didn't go so far. So it was fascinating, wasn't it, the sort of permutations you could get.
And we had some brilliant stories. Lucas Biergaard downing Tiger Woods had a couple of very impressive wins on his resume throughout the week, and I like the fact that you could still see in Tiger's post-tournament press conference, he's working with Golf TV now. Yeah. So you're getting a little bit more access to Tiger than you've ever had before. You could see the fire was still burning in the pit of his stomach because he was visibly annoyed that Biergaard had beaten him in that manner.
Yes, and I was, you know, when you have the little regrets in the tournament, when I, possibly because there was no one in the room to say it to, but I might have said it out loud to myself.
When Tiger went into the world of Dave Tindall.
Kick the old loneliness wolf from the door. when Tiger went two up in that game against Biergaard, All my thought process was beforehand was Tiger's not going to be able to play 36 holes at his best.
Yes.
He's going to fade in that second 18. So when he went two up early, I thought, absolutely, this is a golden opportunity to back Bjerregaard. So had there been someone in the room, I might have said that. A fellow punter, say, rather than my children. And we might have talked that through. And because it played out exactly as I thought. Tiger then started to just get a bit scrappy. And you could tell it's just a lot for him, having played, you know, the days before as well.
I know he was a big prize, but that's why I didn't fancy him pre-tournament either. Yeah, I just thought to win seven rounds over 5 days of action, there's going to be a moment when this Tiger Woods wilts.
Yeah.
And it was in that game against Lucas Biergaard.
Unless he'd won all his games 7-6 and had hardly played, but he'd had enough matches, hadn't he? So, yeah, that one that got away that a bit.
It wasn't without its controversy the week in Austin. Matt Kuchar and Sergio Garcia involved in an incident on the seventh hole in their quarterfinal match where Garcia missed a birdie putt to win the hole and had 6 inches left for the tie, but didn't look towards Kuchar for the concession and rashly took his second putt, missed it, and Kuchar
dobbed him in
basically. Who's to blame here? Because in my opinion, I've read a lot about this on Twitter, didn't see the incident live, but I've watched it back subsequently. Kuchar behaved deplorably, as far as I'm concerned. Garcia's clearly combustible at the best of times and should have waited for Kuchar to concede, but we talk about honour and playing the game in the right spirit, and historically that's what separated golf from other sports. And every other player in that field, in my opinion, says, yeah, that was good, forget about it, let's move on. And Kuchar made it an issue. And I understand Garcia didn't wait for the concession, but Kuchar behaved terribly.
Yeah, there's a few things there. My initial thought was, oh, Kuchar, that stinks. That's just awful. Then, as the days have gone on, I still think that, by the way. But part of me as well is thinking, it's stupid that you've got a rule that allows that situation to unfold. For, you know, it's obvious how that is. The rule shouldn't be, Matt Kuchar shouldn't have been able to say, well, I'm not sure about that. It's a 2-inch tap in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I suppose then what if it had been 2 feet and then, I suppose that's the sort of grey area, but that shouldn't even be an issue. If there was any common sense in golf, the ref goes, behave, it was 2 inches, you know, you're giving him that. But of course, they go to their rule book, oh no, that can't be done, that can't be seen to be done. And then Kuchar's done that. And then so I was down on Kuchar, and then everyone was then, well, a lot of people on Twitter were then saying it's all on Sergio, this. But it's not, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think Sergio has, or Garcia's done the wrong thing, not waiting for the concession. But common sense. Playing the game in the right spirit.
Lack of common sense drives me mad in all areas of life when it's rules, when it's just, that is a stupid rule, and Kuchar's been snide and sneaky to play on it, and there's no getting away from that, unfortunately. The only other thing I'd say is, I think a couple of people said, if that had been Seve, and I agree with them when they say that. I think Seve would have absolutely taken that role to his advantage. But the problem we've got with Kuchar is that he sells himself as this great guy, and he's now doing stuff that you feel like he's a fraud.
And it's these two players again, because Kuchar stiffing his caddy in Mexico, and
well, there's other bits.
And Garcia in Saudi Arabia as well.
Sergio's sort of, I don't know. It's like somehow you forgive Sergio more, even though, because you know that's kind of his character, but, you know, he's up and down, he's volatile, he does good and bad. But Kuchar tries to sell all this good stuff. And then we've seen those two incidents as well. And then we've seen him blank Andrew Coulter on the range when he's gone up to ask him something. Just blanked him.
Yeah.
That was rude. And then weirdly, the PGA Tour put a tweet up saying about showing like the fans going like, go Kuch, these little kids. And they're thinking that's the PGA Tour are thinking that's a great example of kids getting involved. And Kuchar just blanks the kids as well. I thought, what a misstep that is to That's just highlighting him being
it's been a season of missteps for Matt Kuchar, hasn't it, really?
I saw a couple of people said to me, that's why he's now winning, though. That he's now got this hardened kind of attitude that's turned him from a nice guy to a winner.
Does it
have to be like that, though?
Maybe. I mean...
Do you think maybe he sat down with a team of psychologists and they said, come on, Matt, you've got to toughen up a bit.
Possibly, because the game's changed in that respect.
All this golly gosh stuff is, you know, or are we seeing the true Kuchar? Which is it?
Who knows? Mm.
I was pulling for Kevin Kisner in that final.
I was as well. And they subsequently released the hostage video, didn't they, on Monday as well, where everything was pally-pally because the sponsors had clearly been involved.
Yeah.
So
I tweeted about that.
Left
that
a sour taste.
That was the Brent Gareth thing in The Office, basically, when they're sort of, you should have given me the putt, didn't have to. It was all like, oh, come on, no one's seen through that.
What about Graham McDowell back in the winner's circle as well? I'm guessing he's got his heart and mind set on Port Rush.
Does he get in, though?
No, he's not in yet.
That seems a bit of a con, doesn't it?
Yeah, you'd think he'd be in, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So he's got a little bit of work to do for the Open Championship. Should get there, though.
Yeah. Can he invite people?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think you've got to qualify, haven't you?
I think so, but I just wonder whether, I don't know, it's the same shame that if he's went on the PGA Tour with a few months to go and he can't.
Yeah, you'd think on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, it was a concurrent event, but
good to see him back winning. And I think he's hinted at it, hasn't he, in recent weeks, that something like that was coming.
Let's talk about this week then. We've got the Valero Texas Open, and Ricky Fowler is the 10-1 favourite. Matt Kuchar is 16-1 along with Tony Finau. Billy Horschel 20-1 with Jordan Spieth, Jason Kokrak, Jim Furyk, Sung Jaim, all 25s. Abraham Ancer is 28-1 and it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. And it's not a great surprise that we've got a weak field the week prior to the Masters, because as well as many of the top players wanting a week out to recuperate after the match play, the TPC course at San Antonio, it is a very different test to the Golf Club of Houston, which is regularly the event before the Masters, and that's thought of as an ideal preparation because the tournament set the place up, the Golf Club of Houston, to mimic Augusta, and
that's what they've done this week.
Yeah,
isn't it?
But
you think it's you're trying to.
I think you're trying to manufacture something. Yeah. Whereas the Golf Club of Houston,
absolutely. Yeah,
in my opinion, anyway. We'll see if that plays out. But they have made the fairways a little bit wider,
the rough shorter.
But
I mean, I wondered about that because it has been played before. The week before in 2013, they played Texas. So I looked at that leaderboard to see. Because if you think it's going to be played more like the Masters, you might think lack of rough, wider fairways, bombers might come to the fore a little bit more. So that when they did play it the week before the Masters, 2013, the top two were Laird and McIlroy, who do whack it.
Mm.
But then, so then you think, all right, that could be a thing. And then there you go, third place, Jim Furyk.
Yeah.
So...
It's a course that was designed by Greg Norman. It can be a bit of a monster as well, can't it? Par 72 measuring 7,435 yards. And the par fives, which are usually the scoring holes most weeks on tour, are difficult around TPC San Antonio. And whereas most weeks total driving takes a back seat to accurate iron play, this week is slightly different. What you do off the tee generally matters here, and the course has never averaged under par in its history, and it's hosted this tournament exclusively since 2010. And I suppose that look at driving is borne out by the recent winners too. You look at Brendan Steele, Adam Scott, Charlie Hoffman, Kevin Chappell, strong drivers of the golf ball when they're at their best, and that's something that was in the back of my mind when looking for selections this week.
Yeah, that's a fair angle.
Have you got any other angles here, specific skill sets around this course?
Obviously, to be able to play in the wind, it's Texas. That always helps. You've got a few Aussie winners there. It's been quite kind for first timers. I'm not quite sure what that's saying, but... Because sometimes you think if it was always the week before the Masters, it would be an opportunity, wouldn't it, for the sort of lesser lights to... to jump in and get a win while the big players have got their eye on the major coming up. So yeah, there's a few ways to think about it, but I think I've gone for the wind factor because it's Texas.
Yeah.
And I've lent... Well, one of mine's playing on the wind factor, Aussie factor. There's
okay.
It. And the other one is playing on the... I think the setup might help the longer hitter.
Okay. And you mentioned... we've been mentioning the Masters. Only 17 players in the field are exempt for next week.
Right.
And it's a win and you're in for the Masters as well. So there's a great incentive for a lot of players. But I think just 17 already in the field for the Masters tells you about what the cream of the crop they're not looking at TPC San Antonio as an ideal preparation for next week.
Of course, last year we remember Poulter winning in Houston. He had to get in the Masters. So, I mean, he is an extreme case of someone who can set his mind to something. But there could be some... There's a few players this week. Ryan Moore's an obvious one, isn't he? Who's not in the Masters, who... I don't think he's missed the Masters for years. Mm. That could play out.
Okay, I've got two selections. Both at big prices, mine as well, right, this week.
By big, you mean three figures?
Yeah, or? I do mean three figures. Yeah, both at three figures. So I tended to navigate away from the top of the market. I didn't think there was that much value in the leading contenders this week, personally. But maybe you've got a different thought process.
I've got two 50-1 shots, oh, right, so okay. I'm similar.
I'm guessing one of them is Aaron Baddeley, is it not?
Yes. How did you guess?
An Aussie that's good in the wind with a red hot short game.
Yeah. And he's a late entry, wasn't he? He wasn't in the initial.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think he's entered late, but I'm glad he has because I think he's someone who could. In fact, I'm looking at my stats thing. He's not even there, but so I'll get some up. But yeah, Aaron Baddeley. He's an Aussie. We've seen Aussies do well here. Greg Norman Design, so that maybe plays into that a little bit. But Aaron Baddeley, of late, we saw him finish seventh in the Corrales Punta Cana, which was a good knock. Three rounds in the 60s to start with. Didn't make the cut at Sawgrass, but then that's one of those tournaments where you sometimes use hair off.
Yeah.
You know, get out of there. You may as well get out after two rounds and plug away and finish 70th. 17th at Bay Hill was a good effort and runner-up in the Puerto Rico Open, so he's got a nice little run of form, and I've read some encouraging quotes from him this year as well. He was fourth at the Safeway Open as well, back in the fall events, and he's got some course form as well, which adds to his appeal. He's played it a number of times at San Antonio. So he's got 16th last time, 5th the year before, 29th, 20th, 15th, 3rd. He's got all the course form there. So it's just one of those. It's almost, if he has entered late, I wonder why. I don't know why he would have...
decided to swerve this one.
Yeah, you would have thought. Unless it's an admin error from Team Baddeley, who knows. But I just thought 50-1. I would have thought his mix of course and current form... He would have been 40s and even something horrible like 33s, but I thought 50s was playable.
Aaron Baddeley is Dave's first pick. I can definitely see that. I'm going with Scott Stallings as my number one selection at 100-1. I think he's very much underrated this week. He's actually playing some of the best golf of his career at the moment, and although he's still wildly consistent with four missed cuts in his last eight starts, when he's on, he's been very good. Obviously, it's not always going to show up well in his stats, his season-long stats, because he does miss so many cuts. But his approach play has been good in the main, and he was ninth at the Valspar, ranking ninth in strokes gained tee to green. Also finished third at Pebble Beach. And this is a place that clearly suits Stallings. An 11th in 2011, 13th in 2016 as well. I just think in a field of this nature, he shouldn't be 100-1, Scott Stallings. So he's my first selection.
Lost a lot of weight, hasn't he? Slimmed down. And...
He looks like a different... He looks like a completely different fella, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It was bizarre because obviously... Unless they're in real contention or you're Tiger Woods, you don't get much coverage, do you? So you never get to see these players. But yeah, Scott Stallings looks like a different player.
Yeah, so it's like he's had a sort of rethink about everything and
It's working. It's working because he's always going to miss loads of cuts. That's just his MO, isn't it? Basically, you look through his career, littered with missed cuts, but then he can pop up. Yeah. And this is a good track for him, I think.
Yeah. My second pick. Well, I've played into two angles. I've played into the hit it a long way angle, and also the first time winner angle.
All right.
Can you guess?
No, I thought you were going to go with Ryan Palmer actually, but is it Joaquin Niemann?
No.
No, go on, I can't.
At 50s again.
Loop list,
yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of Loop List. Closest brushes with victory have probably been in Florida, haven't they? Honda Classic. So that's a Bermuda windy course. So I think he should do well here. The stats maybe don't quite tell you that, but you can sort of pick away at them and find some encouragement. He was 46th on debut, 29th. The following year, then he opened with a 68 in 2017, so that's starting to come good. And then he missed the cut, and then missed the cut again last year. But he's not the most consistent of players, but I think he can have these big weeks. He's got a third in the Houston Open, so again, they were in Texas. And I thought he's had some nice results this year. So if you look through his, it's kind of like feast or famine, really. It goes sort of like good result, miscut, good result, miscut. So we've got fourth at the Safeway Open, fourth at the RSM Classic, 15th at the Genesis, 10th at Bay Hill. So he's got some nice form if you're selective when looking at it.
Yeah.
So I just think he can get those really big, strong weeks. And I think from what on offer this week, I know he hasn't shown it before, but I think there's every chance he could pop up nicely this week, and it just helps that the course might suit him more this year than it did others.
Yeah, I like it. Luke List at 50-1. Put a one in front of that 50-1 for my second selection.
Can I try and guess it?
Yeah, you can.
Sean Stefani.
No.
Jonas Blixt.
No. Well, how many more guesses
do you want? It can't possibly be Adam Long, can it?
No, it's not Adam
Corey
Long.
Corey Connors.
No.
Gone.
DJ Trahan is my second selection. He's really rediscovered his form this season. I was surprised to see him available at this price. One of the key stats this week, I think, is bogey avoidance, and he ranks sixth on tour in that particular statistic. And in his last seven starts on tour, he's had five top 20s, DJ Trahan. A run which stretches back to the Barracuda at the end of last year. Admittedly, those finishes have come in pretty weak events like the Puerto Rico Open and last week in the Dominican. But his ball striking has just been superb. And he's got form at TPC San Antonio as well, having finished 15th at the course in one of his two starts back in 2013. Under the radar slightly, DJ Trahan is my second selection.
All right, yeah.
Any we want to mention then? I had quite a long short list.
I think the first name I looked at was Abraham Ancer.
Yeah.
And then I saw we've got him at 28 and he'd been cut.
Full transparency, I backed Abraham Ancer on Monday.
Get a bigger price
He opened 40s with Hills.
So that 40s, I'm tipping him there at 28. Yeah. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, he's struck the ball brilliantly at the Players' Championship, played really well last week in Austin as well. Obviously,
Texas angle,
Mexican born, but resides in Texas.
Yeah.
And had a couple of cracks at the course, played eight rounds without really contending. I think he'll have a big week given his ball striking at the moment. Very good driver of the golf ball as well, Abraham Ancer. So yeah, I'll add the top of the betting. I think he'd be the player that maybe we both don't want to win this week, given that the price is just a little bit prohibitive at 28s.
Yeah, I thought if you weren't on him, you wouldn't be backing him at 28s, so well done for getting on him. But the other one I thought you would like but then be put off was Jason Kokrak at the price.
Yeah.
25s.
It's a little bit short, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know who else I think is going to go big this week? Hao Tong Lee.
Yeah, I
really do. I think 40-1 is
why
decent.
Why particularly here?
Because I think it's about driving the golf ball here. And you look through his best four. He's a fantastic player in the wind as well, Hao Tong Lee, remember? Mm-hmm. A lot of those windy desert tracks, he's got very solid form. And you look at that performance in Saudi Arabia, finished second behind Dustin Johnson. That leaderboard was littered with players who drive the ball long and are noted for their driving. I reckon 40-1 could look very big on Houghton-Lee in a field of this nature, because he's going to be one of the, in my opinion, one of the best players in this field in the next 24 yeah. months.
And he's a top bloke, isn't he?
Yeah.
Really funny and engaging, isn't he? I like him.
I do. I think he'll outrun his odds this week.
Yeah.
Houghton-Lee. And the other one, Billy Horschel, pretty rock solid, but 20-1 wasn't that appealing.
Yeah, Benny Arn, I thought, might go well as well. His putting stats are just fairly horrific, but he's hitting it well.
His stats in terms of what you want, like you're looking strokes gained off the tee to green play, ball striking, he's pretty much top of the list, isn't he? Five or six tournaments.
But if it's one of those weeks where like 8-under's winning, then I think that certainly brings him into play sharply.
It will be interesting to see what the winning score is, because when Andrew Landry won last year with a total of 17-under par, it was they expected an anticipated wind. So they watered the greens heavily.
Yeah.
So they were more receptive. If you think that's going to be an anomaly, which I do, you'd expect that's why I've gone for Stallings to a certain extent. He tends to play his best golf when the scoring is difficult, and I'm hoping it's going to be a test this week.
Yeah, Stallings done well at Torrey Pines, hasn't he? Was it a win in a second there?
Yeah.
Have you seen a reliable weather forecast this week? It seems to be a bit... I don't think
it's going to be too windy, is it?
But I think the bottom line is there will be Texas, some wind, isn't it? Yeah, so it will.
Mm. Any others you want to mention?
Lucas Glover keeps playing well again. If it's a ball striking test won by 8-under, you'd think of him.
Yeah.
And he can putt as well these days. Right at the front of the market. You'd think Finau's not had a top 10 yet this year. Surely he's going to get one soon.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
I think he is fairly...
He's disappointed me a little bit, though, this year so far. And 16-1 isn't giving anything away for a player that hasn't had a top 10 yet this year, is it?
No, exactly, yes. Very much
Matt Kuchar, do you think the seven rounds last week catch up to him at some point, perhaps?
I hope so.
And Ricky, I wouldn't want to back Ricky Fowler at 10-1, personally.
No, I see what you mean. I think there's lots... He's a good fit for this call. He should go well, but yeah.
Do you think he's at the top of his game? Do you think he's got to be thinking about next week, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's just that he's played well before the majors before, hasn't he?
Didn't he
win the Scottish Open before the Open? Other things like that, so...
And we've got to mention Jordan Spieth as well. I mean, a year ago, you'd have found it inconceivable that he wouldn't head the betting for this event.
Yeah. The other one of interest, you think, how will he do, is Youse Loughton.
Yeah.
Because he seems a bit like a sort of plucky European having a go. So does that mean we've priced him right, or is he?
Do you think he's 40s? Got? Do you think he's got the class of Houghton-Lee?
Right now, well, Lee's the better bet going forward, isn't he? But Loughton's good, isn't he?
Yeah, he is good. And Lucas Beauregard.
The only negative there is, will he be absolutely whacked after playing seven rounds? But yeah, 40s.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think a bit of a dip. Which same applies to Kuchar as well, to be fair, 16s.
Yeah. Okay, let's have a quick word on the Masters then, because it is coming. Tyndall's been... you've been meticulously preparing for the event already, and Rory McIlroy currently heads the bet. I mean, these prices right now, the golf compilers put these prices out, and they pretty much stagnate, don't they? These prices have been out forever. And the only time you see real changes are when someone wins an event and they get cut 20 points.
That's the... I mentioned to you before we came on. That's the thing about the week before a major kind of annoys me, because if you've got someone in mind, I don't want them... If you remove betting, I don't mind if they're playing or not. So it might be seen as a good thing, but you know... If you've got someone in mind and they're playing the week before, the worst case scenario is they lead after 36 holes. They get cut for the Masters and then might finish 47th.
Yeah.
And yet they've been cut for sort of no good reasons kind of thing. So, and then you can't win because you don't want them playing badly either. So you don't know what to. It just annoys me.
Yeah,
sort of.
It is tough. I think the key message here is that a lot of these prices will be bigger
just
next week.
Have your mobile phones get ready to pull the trigger on Masters prices.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah, and I know William Hill tend to be aggressive on the Wednesday of the tournament as well. So that's something definitely worth bearing in mind. I think we'll be top price on a number of players on the Wednesday of the Masters. Rory McIlroy is 13-2 to win it. Dustin Johnson 10-1. Justin Rose 12-1. Tiger Woods 14s. John Rahm 16-1 along with Justin Thomas. Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Francesco Molinari, Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler all 20s as things stand. And it's 25-1 and bigger the rest of them. We don't want to give too much away because we'll have our picks next week. But this is a big trends tournament. I know you're interested in trends as well.
Yes.
And there's a few players that I like the look of without giving too much away.
I mean, if you just think back to last year and you think of the top five, it's Patrick Reed's winning it. Then you've got Fowler, Spieth, McIlroy. It was four and Rahm. So it's like you almost know that there's going to be a load of the big players. Unlike, say, US Open, where quite a few of them will miss the cut, you know that every one of these top players is probably going to be up there at some point.
And this is interesting because people see, obviously, that limited field. You remove first-timers, you remove the old guys, etc., etc., and they think, oh, there's bound to be each-way value there.
Yeah.
And while there is each-way value there, it tends to be at the top of the betting rather than the middle section.
Yeah, someone like at 25s might be the best each way value in there because he's a big player who can get a place. But but they're going to clog the places up, aren't they? So if you're looking down at 100s or 80s, you're going to get four of the big guys in the top six probably.
And that's because it's played at the same course every year.
Yeah,
we know which players it suits and which players it doesn't suit.
Yeah.
And we know that the majority of the big names are suited by the way Augusta National plays. And you mentioned to me off air, we spoke about the Masters for 10-15 minutes off air, that they have lengthened the fifth hole now as well. That plays at 495.
Yeah, 40 yards added.
So it's becoming even more of a bomber's paradise now. The only thing to counteract that is that it's been dry, hasn't it? So it's likely to play firmer and faster than it might have done in previous editions.
Then there's always that thing about they mow the grass so into the players so it doesn't really bound on too much. But yeah, however you look at it, a lot of those big guys are going to be right up there. You can't, you know, the other majors, US Open and the Open Championship, are much better for big priced outsiders. There might be one in there, but
you've got to find it.
Good luck finding him. Yeah.
Okay, that's to come. That's to come next week. I'm looking forward to that. Our Masters preview will be out on Tuesday next week. Should we recap the selections for this week?
Yes.
Your two picks, both at 50-1.
Yeah, I'll go a point each way on Ricky Fowler. No, thinking ahead to next week. Oh, have I given it away? Oh, I don't know. Double bluff, triple bluff. 1 point each way, Luke List, and 1 point each way, Aaron Badley.
Yeah, I'm going a point each way on both my players as well. Scott Stallings at 100-1, DJ Trahan at 150-1. I think the player we both don't want to win is Abraham Ancer.
Yeah.
Or mine definitely is this week.
And Matt Kuchar.
Thank you everyone that's tuned in and listened. If you want to follow Dave on Twitter, you can do at Dave Tindall Golf. You can follow myself at D Kellner. Maybe send us your Masters picks ahead of next week with a bit of reasoning why, and we try and give you a shout out on the podcast. Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. Check out all the betting for the Valero Texas Open at sports.williamhill.com and on the app. And myself and Dave will be back for our Masters podcast next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.